This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good Monday afternoon to you. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Tiki and Tierney here on CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. I'm Tiki Barber. You can get us on Twitter. More aptly, you can get Mike Samter, who manages our Twitter account, at Tiki and Tierney. Need to listen on Sirius XM. It's 206. Or cell phone, computer, any other way that you want to stream at radio.com. Just look for Tiki and Tierney. BT's still out for another week. He'll be in tomorrow hosting the show. Sean Payton, the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, is going to join us for our Tiki and Tierney training camp two-a-days and our very next segment. So coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to have the head coach of the New Orleans Saints join us later on in our show, probably in the 4 o'clock. Maybe he might have to push to the 5 o'clock hour. Our friend Justin Pugh, offensive lineman for the Arizona Cardinals, will join us to do the Arizona Cardinals a preview. Obviously, he's in training camp right now, so his schedule might move around. But we chatted with him last year. He was very open about the challenges that they were going to face as an offensive line, which proved to be prophetic as they struggled a lot. And ultimately, Josh Rosen got shipped. There's a lot of stories to hit over the weekend that we talk about. Some of the players, the Josh Rosen story, interestingly, down in Miami is one of the more compelling ones. But for some reason, I guess because we like superstars, more importantly, we like superstars that bring drama. What we're going to talk about is the helmet rule, or the helmet, I should say, issues of Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown, we hit this on Friday. It came up just at the end of our show as he was a tweet stream by Mike Silver of Yahoo and the NFL Network was relaying some information about how Antonio Brown has these issues with his feet. We all know stepping into a cryo chamber without the right footing, he caused some frostbite. He had these disgusting blisters on his feet. He posted them on social media, and it caused him to only be able to practice for a couple of days at Raiders training camp. They're now 2 weeks into training camp. He's only been a couple of days there, and he left. And a lot of people thought it was just to get second opinions on his feet. But in actuality, what he's really upset about is he subsequently has filed a grievance for and is now threatening to sue the NFL over is his helmet. And this story got wackier and wackier the more you heard about it because he didn't want to accept the new helmets, the ones that were approved. And so he would do things like go get his old helmet and paint it Raiders colors and then try to slip it into practice. And the trainer said, hey, look, if you don't have an approved helmet, you're not allowed to be on the football field. They're trying to protect you from concussions, Antonio Brown. You have a history of them, remember? Now, one of them was Vontaze Burfict, who took a cheap shot at you. But still, you have a history of concussions. You should want an approved NFL helmet. He said no. And the story just kept going on and on. It honestly felt like something that would pass in a day or two. Oh, this is just nonsense. This is just Antonio Brown being a little bit quirky. He can't really be, you know, threatening to sit out a season, the entire season, and not play again if he can't wear the helmet of his choice. But he's doubled down, and he keeps doubling down, the latest being that he is going to sue or threatening to sue the NFL if he gets a concussion in the new helmet. I mean, here's the thing. If he threatens to sue the NFL if he's going to get a concussion in a new helmet, the NFL is going to get sued because guess what? He plays football. Football, you know, that sport where you're a wide receiver and you get hit by guys sometimes bigger than you because you catch the ball and you try to run with the ball and sometimes you try to run over them. You're going to get a concussion, whether it's your old helmet or your new helmet. Your old helmet, by the way, which you had multiple concussions in, your new helmet, you're still going to get concussions because it's football. In football, you get concussions. Now, if it was just Antonio Brown, maybe this wouldn't be a story today. Maybe it would just be, this is because this is Antonio Brown. He likes to be a drama king. I almost said queen, but I didn't want to go that way. He's almost a drama king. He likes to bring attention to himself. We see him with the hot air balloons and the helicopters and the noise on social media. You could say it was just him and it was just an isolated incident. But then you start getting Tom Brady talking about this. Tom Brady, when asked about this, and obviously you knew he would be asked about it because Tom Brady was also one of those that used a helmet that eventually was banned by the National Football League. He had 1 year of a grace last year. His old helmet, which was the Riddell VSR4, was one of those that was prohibited by the NFL this year, and everyone had to move into the new style of helmets, those that have passed these stringent testing procedures and become approved. And the reason that the NFL wants approved helmets is obvious, right? There's a concussion crisis that dominated the National Football League for almost a decade. I remember going back in 07 when they had those hearings down on Capitol Hill, and senators and congressmen who maybe did, probably did not have an idea what they were talking about or just spewing nonsense to try to hold the NFL accountable and threatening to take their antitrust issues before the courts. And so it became a loud yelling point. And I think at that point it was necessary. It had been largely been ignored. I remember days of getting concussions and, or not concussions, getting dinged and seeing stars and being somewhat wobbly and just kind of shaking your head out, taking some smelling salts and going back on the field. Ultimately, we now know that that is very detrimental. So what happened in 07 was necessary. What it evolved into, which is a new testing procedures for helmets, is also necessary. And players shouldn't be complaining about them. Here was Tom Brady when asked about this. This was on the Greg Hill show, which was up in Boston, WEEI. He said, quote, "I've been experimenting with a couple of different ones. I really don't love the one that I'm in, but I really don't have much choice," Tom Brady said. "So I'm just trying to do the best I can and work with it." Now, if this was like, I'm trying to think of an example that makes sense. If this is like a race car driver who has to, goes from driving, a Chevy, souped up car to now driving a pickup truck, I would understand why there would be a lot of adjustment period. It's a helmet we're talking about. It's there to protect you. It's there to keep you from getting concussions. And it just keeps going on and on and on. Tom Brady talked about this. Jason Witten has talked about this. We're playing football. You need to wear a helmet. This is not a situation where you can compromise your health because it's a liability to the league and it's a detriment to yourself down the line because you want to feel comfortable in something that was old and unsafe. I wish I could figure out why this has become such a big story and why we're still sitting on it and why it's hard not to talk about. Because it's a helmet. Shoulder pads, maybe that's different. Knee pads, shoes, cleats, I get it. It's a helmet. It's necessary. You have to wear a helmet. And if it's not going to protect you, the NFL, rightfully so, is not going to allow you to wear one that's going to compromise you. 855-212-4227. Now, the bigger question, I think, that comes from this is, does Antonio Brown have a case, or is this about something else? Now, D'Cell speculated on Friday that this has to be about something else. That, yes, it's a helmet issue on the surface, but there's got to be something bigger. He's making a ton of money, $53 million deal he did, 3 years, $53 million deal. He only signed it's only $1 million in signing bonus, so there's really no threat to the Oakland Raiders here because the guaranteed money is not It's easy for them to, you know, swallow that. It's not like he has $30 million guaranteed that he's going to miss out on. And they're in the process, or they're almost at the process of sending him what they call a 5-day letter, which is you basically have 5 days to report. Otherwise, you sacrifice your salary and bonuses for the upcoming season. That hasn't happened yet. John Gruden and the Raiders are standing by him. But back to the speculation that this is something else other than just a helmet. And I don't think it's going to come out that there is something else, but this tells me that Antonio Brown's feet, the original issue, is bigger than we want to make it out to be. And I mentioned this briefly on Friday, and I'll reiterate it. Justin Gatling, who was a sprinter, United States sprinter, he won a gold medal back in 2000, I believe, or maybe 2004, in the 100 meters. Obviously knows the importance of having healthy feet. He had this exact same issue with his feet. Stepped into a cryo chamber, caused a bunch of blisters. He said it took him months to recover, months to feel like he could run on his feet without compromising them, because your skin is so thin and the blisters will pop up. And if you get tears in your feet, I mean, the pain is I can't even imagine it. So while this could be about Antonio Brown's helmet, I think this is actually about Antonio Brown's feet. And if Antonio Brown can't play for the Oakland Raiders right now, I don't think it'll be because of his helmet. I think it'll be because of the blisters on his feet. And the Raiders are stuck with an issue with Antonio Brown that's not going to change anytime soon. Antonio Brown's an interesting case. This helmet controversy shouldn't be a controversy because it's a helmet. The NFL has a rule. You follow the rules. I think this was more a distraction from the bigger issue, which is Antonio Brown's feet. We'll find out if he ever gets back on the field. 855-212-4227. Antonio Brown and his feet to New Orleans Saints and their head coach, who has had a fantastic run over the last couple of years, but he keeps coming up short. What's the urgency for Sean Payton and the New Orleans Saints? We'll talk to him next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is brought to you by GEICO. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Tiki Barber here, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, 855-212-4227 if you want to reach out to us. The other thing about the Antonio Brown situation, as far as threatening to sue if he should get a concussion, I mean, how easy is it to fake a concussion? I mean, seriously. Hey, I got banged around. I think I'm compromised. Take a baseline test. Okay, I'll just flunk the baseline test. I mean, Peyton Manning used to do that the other way. He used to underperform when he would take the baseline, so that if he was ever compromised or got somewhat of a concussion in a game — I don't think this ever happened, I don't think he ever tested this theory — but if he ever was to have gotten banged around and he wanted to stay in the game, because he performed poorly on the baseline, he'd be okay to pass it during the when he was compromised and potentially had a concussion. So this will never have a chance to have any legs with this Antonio Brown threatening to sue over the helmet. And at the end of the day, why would you do something that makes you less safe as a football player? I don't get it, but I guess I just don't get Antonio Brown. The New Orleans Saints have been in the division round. They've been in the NFC Championship game over the last 2 years, but they haven't quite gotten there to the championship, the long-sought-after second one for my good buddy Sean Payton, who's going to join us on our Tiki and Tierney training camp two-a-days to preview the New Orleans Saints. And we're joined here on Tiki and Tierney by my buddy Sean Payton. Sean, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Outstanding. How are you guys?
I cannot complain. Is training camp going well for you? I mean, this is like training camp 30 for you by now, isn't it?
We are. Yeah, we are. We're well underway and dealing with a little heat, probably a little bit warmer than it usually is at this time of the year.
Yeah.
But But yeah, it's going well. We had a morning practice today, and then we'll have a walkthrough this afternoon.
So I know the first question you usually get from a lot of people, Coach, is about the new pass interference rule, which you had a big hand in getting implemented in the National Football League. But I'll save that for last because we'll talk about some of the new rules in the NFL. But the urgency that you must feel, and Andrew Bogus, who voiced our intro, mentioned this, he alluded to it. Do you feel an urgency to win that second championship? You win one, it's fantastic. You win two, you become a different kind of icon, both in the city and throughout the league. Are you feeling that, or is it just you just go about your job?
I honestly would say I don't know that we feel that. We feel a sense of urgency to perform and a sense of urgency to get better. You know, one of the things that happened in training camp each year, and we just talked about it last night in the team meeting, you know, you're in a race to prepare, you're in a race to get ready for the start of the season, and for these next, you know, call it four and a half weeks, you really don't know how the other 131 teams are doing relative to yourself and in their preparation. And, you know, throughout the season, you know, because you're able to record the wins and losses, but during training camp, you know, you're trying to create that sense of urgency and make sure everyone understands that this is an important time of the year, not only for your team, but for the coaching staff and everyone involved in deciding on the roster.
Yeah, no, I can feel that, and I can imagine what you have to go through to make that clear to everyone. Sean Payton, Saints head coach, joining us on Tiki and Tierney's training camp two-a-days. Sean, Drew Brees just turned 40 in January. Just knowing him, knowing you, knowing how this thing works inside the NFL, you're probably not mentioning that on a daily basis or even talking about it. But how do you think about that fact? It wasn't too long ago where playing after 40 was absurd to think about. Now we have two players doing it, Tom Brady, obviously, and now Drew Brees. How do you think about that? Do you process it?
Well, look, obviously, a lot's changed, you know, in the last, let's just say 20 years relative to preparation, health, nutrition, you know, what these guys are doing on a regular basis. And what they understand or what they know they have to do if they want to play like they have. And it's really amazing, you know, and so you start with a great athlete, you start with all these other elements and then put in the work ethic and the education. You know, it's hard to explain to the fan the work week in season, and then you know, a guy like Drew in the off season, all the details and little things that he does. But I don't look at it like 40. You know, we don't see age when we see each other. You know, when you feel like you're coming to work with someone you've been with for a long time.
Yeah,
it's not until their son or your children show up that the other feels age. Like, wow, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, exactly. What, you're graduating from high school already?
You know, yeah, that's where you feel it.
Sean, you know, one thing that will make your job and Drew Brees' job a lot easier is Michael Thomas, and he's there for the long haul now after signing a massive extension, averaging $20 million a year. We obviously have seen how good he has been, but tell us the evolution of Michael Thomas, right? He was second-round draft pick. Maybe you knew his name. A lot of people didn't, even though he did go to Ohio State. Like, how did he become the highest-paid wide receiver in the National Football League?
Well, look, I mean, obviously, he's earned it, and he's someone that I would say is extremely competitive. He's a tremendous practice-focused player. You know, sometimes he can be his harshest critic, you know, where he'll get on himself. But his run after the catch, he's strong. We saw these traits at Ohio State. We saw a lot of his run after the catch. You know, he didn't have the opportunities or touches maybe week to week. And yet, man, you see size, you see work ethic, you see the catch radius, and then, you know, the ability to do something with it after he has the ball in his hands. And he's come into this league with that same sense of urgency and that same preparation, and, you know, it's been a good fit. He's someone we play at the X, but we can move him around formationally. And I think that, you know, he put himself in that position based on his production, and it's something that he earned.
We're talking to Sean Payton, head coach of the New Orleans Saints, Tiki and Tierney's training camp two-a-days. Your other offensive stud who you can't not keep an eye on is Alvin Kamara, who has been amazing in the first few years of his young NFL career. Mark Ingram's gone, though. How are you going to manage his workload? Because he's such an important piece to what you do.
Well, I think it's a great question. And I think we went through it a little bit for the first four weeks of the season last year when Mark was suspended. Latavius Murray is a guy we signed that is having an outstanding camp right now. Dwayne Washington's another player in this camp that's playing really well. So we'll have a certain balance, if you will, in our running game with what we want to do in the passing game as well. Alvin is a big part of our offense, and yet I think it's important that the number count or the pitch count is something that allows him the ability to sustain it over the course of the year.
You know, flipping to the other side, Sean, because obviously football is unique in that it's absolutely a team sport. You can't have a strong offense and expect to get by with a weak defense. Last year, your defense was middle of the road, 14th or so around in the National Football League in yards. But it's obviously an important piece, especially as offenses, I'll say, have become easier because you can't hit quarterbacks, you can't strike wide receivers. There's all this protections for the body, so it's become a softer game in a sense. You better have a sound defense. How do you balance the two? Because obviously, I know, and most people know, your focus is on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, look, I think the more and more you do it and the longer you do it, you're trying to see the game, see the practice, see your preparation from a team standpoint, not just one side of the ball. And Dennis has done a great job over there on defense. I think situational football is so crucial in our game right now. You know, not only, you know, total yardage, but, you know, what's your red zone defense like? What's your two-minute defense like? If you put on a season and recap last year for us, you know, we played in 8 or 9 games that were one-score games. And I'm quite certain that every other team in the league played for the most part in call it a half a dozen games at least that could have went either way. And so we played well in those games. And so we can't practice enough of those situations because they're going to end in a 2-minute drive.
Yep.
They're going to end with us defending a 2-minute drive. And I think that Dennis, our staff on defense, and the players we've acquired have really, I think, button's not the right word, but the confidence has come, and it can only come from demonstrating it on the field, and they've done that, and it's created a competitive camp.
Yeah, no, that's the best way. It's the only way to be, because otherwise you get into the regular season, and you're waiting 2 or 3 games to get primed. We're talking to Sean Payton, head coach of the New Orleans Saints, Tiki and Tierney's training camp, two-a-days. All right, the non-call in the NFC Championship game, obviously you were very vocal about it, as we heard on in the intro that we put together of you. It has now become a rule in the National Football League that coaches can challenge pass interference calls or non-calls. What effect do you think it's going to have? And do you feel, I guess, vindicated because it actually became a rule, even though on a trial basis?
Well, there's no vindication, and you're trying to improve the league. You're trying to improve the sport for the fan bases. And, you know, I think there would be a large effect or a dramatic effect if there were an unlimited amount of challenges, but you only have 2 challenges. So I would say we're going to be a little bit more judicious with our challenges because the 2 additions that just came into the system have a chance to be larger or greater impact plays. So do I want to challenge a 7-yard completion for a first down midfield? Maybe, but maybe not. I certainly want to have a flag in my pocket in the second half if now pass interference or potentially OPI are reviewable.
Yeah.
So I don't think that transition will be a big deal relative to the pace of the game, the time of the game, all those other things. I think the pressure's on New York, quite honestly, when the calls come in to find that consistency button that they need to have and quite honestly should be able to have.
Yeah. So far in the yeah, go ahead.
That has to happen. And we're far enough along with our technology. We're far enough along with the feeds that we're getting to have a standard, a baseline, if you will, that we know that when it goes to New York, you and I and eight other guys know, for the most part, that's going to be overturned or not. It's when we start getting the up and down relative to the review or the inconsistency, that'll be the concern. And so I think a lot of people will be paying attention to how it's handled.
Yeah, no, you're starting to see it a little bit in the preseason. I think it's mostly coaches trying to figure out how it's going to be handled. 2 of 17 reviews have been overturned so far. And last question for you on this, and really for the preview here, Sean, does it force you to have a different set of rules when you think about challenging, when you pull that flag out, right? Because the good coaches have a list. I'm going to challenge this. I'm going to think about this. This is when I'm going to throw the flag. You, now it's got to change.
Yeah, I think it forces you. But when you take these two calls and add them to the challenge system, I think it forces you to be a little bit more judicious with what you want, especially in the first half.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you lose it, you lose it.
The second half, picture this, fourth quarter, and you're at the 4:18 mark, and there's a big play down the field, and you see that it was, you know, and you don't have a flag, or you don't have a flag, or even worse, you don't have a timeout.
Yeah. Then you're stuck.
And so, now look, you still, in the first half, if you see something egregious enough or something that you feel like is worth the challenge, then you go with it. And so, but the only way to get your third challenge is to be 2 for 2. And so I think the fans will be used to it very quickly. And look, that's just one element of correcting what we saw. The other thing, that's just correcting the mistake. The better question is, why'd the mistake happen? Mm-hmm. And I think in the postseason, the idea of all-star crews, although it sounds good,
yeah,
I think we'll see that diminish. In fact, that is diminishing. We're going to go back to keeping the crew intact together, and you earn that playoff berth as a crew rather than as an individual official.
Yeah, it's just,
and
like,
so if you're doing a playoff game, then you go as a crew, and if someone in your crew is not performing up to standard, then they need to get there. But two officials were on that play. One felt like he had an obvious angle. The other had the better angle and acquiesced to the veteran official. They'd never worked together prior to that.
Yeah, no, and that causes trouble. It's just like a team. If you have unfamiliarity, bad things tend to happen.
Sure.
Sean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good luck to you with the rest of the preseason. Hopefully health, because we know that makes such a huge difference at this point in the season. And once the regular season starts, all the best to you, my friend. Be well.
Thanks, Tiki. Good talking to you, man.
Thanks for joining us. Sean Payton, head coach of the New Orleans Saints. We're a tad bit late here after our Tiki and Tierney training camp 2-a-days. We usually do interviews this early in the show, but when you can get Sean Payton at 3:20, you do it. Inbounds and out of bounds will come up at some point in the show. Dak Prescott turns down an enormous number. Is it worth it for him to turn it down, or is he crazy? We'll get to that next, but first, here's an update from Jay Berman. It's time to Ask the Pros, where you, the listener, get to ask me a question, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply check out the link, cbssportsradio.com/askthepros, or tweet your questions at CBS Sports Radio using the hashtag AskThePros. Be listening later on in the show when I will answer one of your questions. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Tiki Barber here on CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Hit us up, 855-212-4227 on Twitter, at Tiki and Tierney. Especially you Cowboys fans who want to talk about Dak Prescott. Now, the Cowboys are sitting and waiting right now for the Ezekiel Elliott stuff to play its way out. I wish I could say I was optimistic to it, but I heard something over the weekend that I didn't think about, but it makes sense. Because he's on the fifth-year option, and this is his fourth year of his contract, he actually has 2 years before it becomes – he has 2 years to toll a season, to get a season under his belt. So a week ago, I would have said there's no chance Zeke is sitting out. If they don't come right with him, I think there actually might be a chance that he sits out. It's a different story. We got to dig deeper into it. But at some point, they need to get some answers. Tony Pollard, who is the fourth-round pick this year in 2019 from Memphis, he's gotten a lot of good looks at camp. Mike Weber, who we all remember was Ohio State. Previously, he was at Michigan. He's looked okay in camp. Alfred Morris, they signed a couple of weeks ago when they realized that Zeke wasn't going to show up. But none of those guys, and it's, again, just based on the first preseason game with Wes, particularly with Weber and Pollard, they don't look anything like Zeke, like nothing like Zeke. They can be serviceable, but they're not going to be Zeke, and that's going to change the way that this offense functions, and more importantly, it's going to change how Dak Prescott plays. Now, Dak Prescott, we know he's a good quarterback. Is he elite? Not sure. You could look at his numbers and say, well, look, he's got this very high completion percentage, 68%. A lot of that was non-risky. Because remember, their top receiver last year was Cole Beasley. Cole Beasley's not taking the top off of defense. He's not throwing these deep balls down the field, these 16-yard dig routes, these in-cutting routes. He's throwing crossing routes and hitches and things that are easily completable for a quarterback. It's safe. It's effective. And if you have a good run game like the Dallas Cowboys did last year, it's winning. So what's that worth in the National Football League? Well, apparently not worth $30 million a year. At least this is the report that's coming out of Dallas, is that the Cowboys and Jerry Jones offered Dak Prescott a contract in the range of $30 million a year, but he has turned it down. Right now, he's making button bupkis. He's due for an upgrade, even if he's not an elite level. He's only making $2 million, $2.025 million, to be perfectly exact. But apparently, him and his agency have turned down this huge number, which is $30 million per year. He's been good in the regular seasons, 13-3. He was that first year. Then I think they were 9-7 his second year, and last year, what were they? They 10-6 last year. I think they were 10-6 last year, but only 1-2 in the postseason. And so, what is he worth? That's the hardest question to ask about quarterbacks. What should you be paying your quarterback? And we had the same thought last week when we talked about Tom Brady, who for years has been making $15 or $16 million. He finally got an upgrade in his salary to $23 million. And now Dak Prescott is turning down 30. To me, this rings of exactly what I was referencing last week when we talked about Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins, who took a series of one-year deals, essentially franchise tag deals, because they couldn't come to consensus on his net worth, and he kept betting on himself, and because they couldn't find another solution, and he actually played okay, he just kept getting franchise tags. But the reason he wouldn't take a below-market deal was because he had to do it for the position. I got to stand for the guys that are coming behind me. Now, Dak, I don't know if he's standing on that same position. My guess would be that he is. That he sees where the trend is going. And especially when you hear some of the things that he talked about last week or 2 weeks ago when he talked about the new money. Now, this is the side of the sport that I think we're not used to. That is players understanding where their salaries come from. It's not, you know, your owner just pulling out his wallet and being like, hey, look what I got. I'm gonna rip you off this amount of money. It's a percentage of the total revenues that come into the league. And because teams have been building new stadiums, teams have been getting new naming right deals. And we just saw this latest one with the Oakland Raiders. Who was it with the Oakland Raiders that got the naming rights? Allegiant, yeah, Allegiant Stadium. You get these $20 to $30 million deals per year. That's all league revenue, which means that the salary cap, which already has gone up $10 million a year for the last two or three years is likely to go up at least 10 more next year, and maybe even more than that when you start factoring in the gambling rights that are becoming an interesting piece of the puzzle with the National Football League. Now, there's no deals for gambling yet in the National Football League, but it's coming. So if you're Dak Prescott and you know that as you sit right now, you're probably not worth $30-plus million to be in the top five paid quarterbacks in the National Football League, but because you know where it's going, you know where the revenue is headed, you can sit and say, I'm not taking 30, because I know in a year it's going to be much more than 30. What say you, Samter?
Well, here's my question. Knowing that they're trying to get Zeke paid 2 years early, and Amari wants his money, and they just paid DeMarcus, and Byron Jones wants his money.
All deserved, by the way.
The only way that this could have worked is if what Stephen Jones had kind of said, maybe these guys will take a little bit less than market value in order to make it work for the team. Kind of calling out the guys. He said this a few weeks ago. So if Dak is going to turn down 30-something million, which would make him a top-five quarterback,
yeah, he's not
which
doing
he's
that,
not
by the
that.
Way. He's not doing that. So he's not doing what Stephen Jones suggested is what you're saying.
So what I'm saying is if that's the case and he's not doing it, is there any chance the Cowboys can keep this together? Like,
no.
Don't you think that they kind of had to assume that Dak would
I'm
take
glad
less?
You went that way, because that's kind of where my thought process is. If Dak Prescott, who said a week and a half ago, yeah, there's new money coming in, I think we can all get paid here. And then Stephen Jones qualifies that a little bit, saying, I think I agree with Dak, but these guys got to be willing to take a little bit of a hometown discount to be a Dallas Cowboy. And now Dak is saying, I need to be a top five paid player at my position to make $30 million a year. If Dak is not going to take the hometown discount, then why the hell should Ezekiel Elliott, who gets the crap beat out of him for a living and gets thrown 370 touches a year, not counting the, you know, how many times Dak Prescott drops back to throw the ball, he's taking on pass protection. So, you know, 500 or 600 hits a year, you're not going to take a discount and you want me to take a discount? Forget it. And then Amari Cooper, who's already on the franchise tag, or the fifth-year option, which is essentially the franchise tag, making $14 million a year. That's the starting point for Amari Cooper, right? Amari Cooper's starting point is 14. Now, if he messes around and has an elite season this season while on the fifth-year option, making 14, man, you know he's asking for at least 18. Heck, he's probably going to ask for 20 to be right up there with Michael Thomas. So, I mean, Dak setting a precedent. You are the leader, Dak, but by turning down, reportedly, $30 million, you're setting the precedent for the eventual breakup of the stars of the Dallas Cowboys. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4CBS. What do you think about the Dallas Cowboys? They can't pay everybody. It's just not enough money to go around. We'll take your calls on the other side of the hour. We're supposed to have Justin Pugh. He will be up at the other side of the hour as we continue our Tiki and Tierney training camp two-a-days with the Arizona Cardinals. So much interesting to talk about with the Arizona Cardinals. A new head coach in Cliff Kingsbury, a new quarterback in Kyler Murray. David Johnson is healthy. Larry Fitzgerald is riding that old man horse, still on the farm out there in Arizona. Let's see what's going on with the Arizona Cardinals as our Tiki and Tierney training camp two-a-days continue. That's on the other side of this hour. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.